think we need to turn this on. Lee, can you hear this out there? All right. Welcome, everybody. My name is Patrick Connors, and I am the chair of the Racing Fan Advisory Council, and I'm here today with the other members of the council. I just want to thank everybody for coming out. We're certainly at an interesting place that's undergoing many changes. There's quite a history here to Aqueduct. The current facility opened on September 14th, 1959, and many of you know Bennett Liebman. He was kind enough to give me the front page story there in the New York Times that talked about the grand opening. The governor was here, the mayor was here, and the New York Times reported that when it opened, it was the largest sports facility in the country at 1959. And business, I think, was pretty good here at Aqueduct through the 60s and the 70s. Actually, Alan Carter, who I'll introduce in a moment, gave me an interesting article. In 1980, that was the best attendance for Aqueduct's winter meet. And they averaged over 14,000 fans a day here during the winter. And many people don't realize, but they ran the Breeders' Cup here. The second Breeders' Cup was run here in 1985, which is really hard to imagine. Since that time, I think you see a diminishment in interest in live racing here, which we all think is unfortunate. I think the largest crowd they've had here since the Breeders' Cup was October of 1995, where Pope John Paul II said Mass here at Aqueduct, and there were 75,000 people in attendance. What's happening now, though, is very exciting here with the Racino, and you can see if you look at today's card, the purses are very, very healthy with regard to the money, and some interesting racing, and there's a hope that the combination of these two facilities will improve the racing here, and that's part of the reason why we're here and what we want to talk about, because they do run racing. If you're a New York racing fan, it's 6 months a year, half the year is here at Aqueduct. So with that, our mission is to promote the sport of horse racing in the state. We've got many different tasks we're performing in that regard, and another important part of our mission is to improve the fan experience, and that's the big reason why we're having this program today. We want to hear from the fans about what can be done to improve their experience at this track and other tracks throughout the state, be it thoroughbred tracks or harness tracks. And we may not be able to answer all your questions today, but we want to hear what you're interested in so we can examine these problems and hopefully go back to various people and make improvements for the fan. What we'll do today is, in a moment, I'll introduce the other members of the council, and then what we'll do is Charlie Hayward from NYRA will give a presentation with regard to the changes here. We'll come back with 50 minutes of questions and answers. We'll raise various topics and ask you to comment on them. And then we'll take a tour of the facility where we'll see what is actually happening here. And finally, at the end, we'll ask you to fill out an evaluation regarding your experience today and what you think that can be done to improve the sport of horse racing and the fan experience. I'd like to first introduce Alan Carter, to my right, to your left. He's the racing historian at the National Museum for Thoroughbred Racing up in Saratoga Springs. And Alan actually has a fantastic reputation in academia. He's a lawyer. He's written a leading treatise on legislative history and statutory interpretation, and now he's gone to the good life at the museum, and he is a historian on matters regarding horse racing. Alan?
My name's Alan Carter, and I saw my first race in July 31st, 1967. It was the opening day at Saratoga, and it transformed my entire life. And I worked for the State Library for 30 years. I've been with the National Racing Museum since 2003 when I retired from the State Library.
Okay, our next member who's here with us today is Kelly Young, seated to Alan's left. She is the Associate Director of National Affairs for the New York Farm Bureau, and Kelly's brought so much energy to our group, and she also has a particular knowledge in the sport of harness racing. Kelly?
Thank you. As Dr. Connor said, I have a harness racing background. I've been involved in the standardbred breeding and racing industry for my entire life. I grew up on a breeding farm. I've spent a lot of time in New York State working on the harness breeding program, and I'm very interested to hear your feedback, not only on your experience here at Aqueduct, but also what kind of factors would contribute to you bringing your family and your friends to the races more frequently. So that's what I'm very interested to hear what you all have to say today.
Okay, and to Kelly's left, Michael Amo, who really has a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. Michael, I think you've told us you're retired, but you would never know it. Michael is the chairman of the board of Thoroughfan, which is a group of racing fans that Michael has been kind enough to put together this group, and you see them at Saratoga, you see them at other tracks, and if you haven't signed up, I highly encourage you to sign up to his group. Michael?
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate this opportunity and Naira hosting it, because I think that we really need to reach out to all the fans and talk about the issues. I think the purpose of what we're trying to do is be a conduit for racing issues to the appropriate ears that need to hear them. We can take the fans' voice and try to share them in the right way with the right people, and as Patrick said, improve the racing experience. You know, but we can only do that if the fans are energetic and participate with us. And one of the ways we want to do it is through the questionnaire that Patrick talked about. But we also, at the Racing and Wagering Board website, you can click through to our page and you can email issues that you think are important that the fan council should look at. We're getting many of them right now without really soliciting them. So here we're officially saying, please tell us what you think is important, and we can put them on agenda for a discussion. One of the things that I think is really important for us is that, and never done, and it's part of our mission, is to create an I Love New York horse racing campaign. Can you believe it? We got I Love everything else, but nothing, never had an I Love horse racing campaign. I think that should be top of our plate. And I can only say by fortunate this year, saying I'm the proud father of a 2-year-old New York bred, and so I'm hoping to see him in the fall running at Belmont.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. I thought, Charlie, I would turn the program over to you now. Charlie Hayward is kind enough to host us for this event here at Aqueduct, and he's joined by Ellen McLean of NYRA, and I thought I would turn the program over to you. Charlie, you want the podium, or you want to stay?
It's okay, I'm going to sit right here.
Okay, great. If I can get this mic working.
It's going? Good. Okay, well, thanks very much, Patrick. We're pleased to have the first meeting, at least at NYRA, for the Racing Fan Advisory Council. Today, Ellen and I are going to quickly walk you through a little bit of background and history of Aqueduct and a little bit of what we're doing with the limited money we've had. But now we have the VLT capital money coming in. We'll be doing some significant improvements that Ellen's going to talk briefly about, and you'll see a different Aqueduct when you come back here in the fall next year. This is just a forward-looking statement, but we put in all of our financial presentations. But what we're going to talk about today is the mission of NYRA, the history, the facility, racing and wagering, the fan experience, television program, and give you a little bit of idea of our social media initiatives. NYRA's mission is to produce the highest quality thoroughbred racing, deliver a first-class racing and wagering experience to our customers on track, on television, online, on mobile, and to protect the integrity of the sport, ensuring that the 50-year franchise ensures into the next generation. We did get a new franchise in September of 2008. It was a 25-year franchise to operate horse racing at our three racetracks, Aqueduct, Saratoga, and Belmont. Our board of directors was expanded slightly. We have 25 members, 14 are private members, and 11 are appointed by various areas of the government. And we race 251 days a year between the three racetracks. Quickly, a little bit of history. Aqueduct first opened in 1894 on what was called the Brooklyn Waterworks property, and this was a conduit for water to get from New York City to New York City from Hempstead. There have been some classic horses that have run here, Man-O-War, Secretariat, Cigar. And then in 1955 to 59, Aqueduct was rebuilt. Brand new grandstand, new racing strip, and all the related barns and accessory buildings. And it opened in September of 1959 to a crowd of 42,473, as Patrick said earlier. What a lot of people don't know or don't remember, from 1963 to 1968, Aqueduct actually hosted the Belmont Stakes while the Belmont Park was being
redone. We opened up the inner track in 1975. Equestrix, which we hope to show you a little bit later, was opened in 1981. And in 85 and 89, we built the new paddock area and improved some of the grandstand. This is the demolition of the old aqueduct in April of 1957. This is putting in some of the concrete pipe from the grandstand to the tote board in November. This is a structural steel that went up in January of 58. And this is the new aqueduct when it opened in September of 1959. Quick summary, we race 110 days of the 250-day schedule here at Aqueduct. We run 5 days a week. Average daily attendance is down from some of those more robust numbers that Patrick referred to earlier. We average about 4,300. That's up a little bit from what it was since the closure of New York City OTB. We still have a very strong daily handle, though. Our daily average handle is 6.9 million. We have 509 betting terminals that are either self-service or with tellers in the building. And we sit on a site of 210 acres. Three racing surfaces. As you know, we've got the main track, the dirt track, the inner track that we race on during the winter, the turf course, which we're hoping to get on by late March this year, 14 barn areas that covers roughly 547 stalls, contrasting that to Belmont Park, where we have a little over 2,000 stalls. And obviously the biggest news that occurred here at Aqueduct and with NYRA was the transformation of this building. This used to be the third floor of the grandstand, and now it's a first-class racino with Resorts World, and I'm going to turn it over to Ellen, and she's going to tell you a little bit more about that.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Charlie. This is the beginning of a new era for New York racing. As you may know, as part of a settlement agreement with the state of New York in exchange for $1 billion worth of land, the state decided to capitalize New York racing with proceeds from VLTs. And this has been a long time coming, but now NYRA finally has a source of long-term capital to invest in its future and in the three properties. In October, Resorts World opened with 2,500 machines, and in December went to the full 5,000 machines. They're off to a terrific start. I think with 5,000 machines, the average win per day is about 342. So if they sustain that kind of performance, that means about $27 million a year, roughly, to NYRA to make capital improvements. And we're going to look to use that money wisely, and we'll show you what we're thinking about. This has meant a lot of jobs for this economy, for this local facility. You can see on the right here, where the money goes, 6.5% going up to 7.5% for purses. NYRA's wagering business generates about $100 million of purses, so when you add the VLTs to that, that adds about $40 million at the numbers I was giving you before. The breeders get about 1% right now, going up to 1.5%. For operations, we get about 3%. That translates to about $20 million. That's important to us because NYRA's been in business for over 50 years. We have a lot of legacy costs, including pension obligations and retiree medical costs. So we need these funds to support our operation. And again, the capital expenditures of about 4% translates to almost $27 million. You know, this is our way of saying it's a new era. There is a stark contrast, we acknowledge, between this beautiful brand new facility and our side of the building. We have a lot of plans in mind, but we know that we have some work yet to do. In the meantime, though, Harris, we have made some improvements. This section used to be a deli, and now we've made it into a space to support our customers. It's our guest service area. But we can utilize this space more than we are right now, but we want to make a home for guests to come and get all the information that they need about handicapping, programming, carol sales, and so on. We also want to feature NYRA Rewards, which is our account betting platform. And you'll see the kiosk for that, but as we go on, we'll create an even bigger, better area for our NYRA Rewards patrons. When you go on your tour today, we hope you'll take a moment to look at our RaceQuest terminals. I'm going to talk about what that is in a moment. We invest a lot in televisions. I think we have 165 new flat-screen TVs. So when patrons come to the track, not only do they want to watch the live race, but we offer a lot of other signals in the building. So we're very mindful about the placement of TVs, how many we have, where we put them, how close they are to betting terminals. As we go forward, you know, you can see 50 years of different people's ideas about the right color and the right size carrels and the right chairs to use, and there's a full mix of colors and styles. We're looking to have a consistent look and feel across the building. That gets us back to the aqueduct blue, which I think if you survey our employees, most seem to like that color scheme. So we're looking ahead to new carrels and new, more comfortable chairs. It's time for that improvement. One of the most exciting investments is long shots. We want to present to the public our version of what a 21st century sports betting facility should look like. The target audience for this is very serious, frequent bettors. We've gone on some field trips to Nassau and Suffolk County and also down to New Jersey to see how other companies are operating. So we look at everything from the size of the carrels, how many TVs should we have in the facility. How will bettors be able to bet? Do we have specific wired kiosks in the carrels or not? We're very focused on wireless. We think as we go forward, you need to be able to wager on a wireless device, and certainly in our new long shots, which is a 20,000 square foot section of this building, which you'll see, we will make wireless available. Right now, just to talk about that for a minute, wireless is available in the Equestris, which is our dining area. We are out in the marketplace with an RFP to, you know, bring more wireless into the building. And while that won't be completed in this meet, by the time we get back in the fall, you'll be able to wager pretty much anywhere with a wireless device at Aqueduct. Turning to the racing, this is a very exciting weekend, so you've picked a great day to come. We have some great racing today. We have 13 graded stakes in the Aqueduct winter-spring meet. Two of them were in February. Today is a big day with three graded stakes. We have a couple more in the month of March, and then the Wood Memorial Day on April 7th. So we're very excited about the wagering and the racing program here at Aqueduct, and I think the horsemen are excited with the purses that we offer now. We're seeing many more horsemen come to this facility, which is very gratifying. Turning to NYRA Rewards, I mentioned it earlier. Since OTB closed, we've had about 12,000 new customers to NYRA Rewards. We're very focused on this group. We've developed a new website that we think is a better, more easy to navigate site. Our approach to introducing the new platform, we think, is customer friendly in that we're not forcing people to come to our version 2. We are giving them the option, and we're delighted to see that more quickly than we expected, our patrons are opting for the new NYRA Rewards site. So we think we've done a good job with this development. RaceQuest. While we've talked about initiatives to support our very serious bettors, we also want to appeal to new racing fans, and we want to take some of the mystery out of handicapping and betting. So this program, this software, is really targeted to the new bettor, and we hope you'll take a look at it when you go downstairs. We would very much like your feedback on how you think this is working. beyond the day in, day out delivery of racing, we try to make some, you know, special contests and events to bring people to the site. We had a handicapping tournament at Aqueduct this fall that was filled to capacity, and we think it was a good success. Our customers really liked it. The Picks and the Pros and Ponies contest is something that I think has been at Aqueduct for at least 5 years. This is a tie-in to the NFL season. We know we compete. We're in a very big marketplace in New York. There are a lot of sports options, and we compete with football in the fall. So this ties in a contest betting on 4 NFL games every Sunday and 2 NYRA races. So this was very popular for us. It has been, and it was a good success this fall as well. You know, a lot of people don't necessarily realize that we have a significant television operation. We distribute our signal to over 700 physical locations throughout the United States every day. In addition to that, over the years, we've tied into MSG to produce and show certain featured races on their cable channel. And then when OTB closed, we made a thoughtful decision to assume their contract, their cable distribution contract. This was a big deal because it's costing us over $2.5 million a year, but this was an investment in our customers. We thought it was important to maintain that continuity and offer our programming on Channel 71 throughout the 5 boroughs. We think this has supported our account wagering business, our telephone business, our internet business. So the investment is worthwhile, but it is significant. Now that we have a channel to program, we need to do more than just deliver a raw feed of our shows. And so we developed 2 new programs. Race Day, which focuses on simulcast races throughout the country, and this is on our dark days. And then the National Racing Report really previews the stakes races. So television is very much on our minds. We focus a lot on this. We've invested in a TV truck that's significant. We have cameras around the tracks in fixed positions. So in addition to TVs, we have to have the fundamental equipment to actually distribute it throughout the country. There's $2 billion of wagering on NYRA's product every year, and the majority of that comes from places other than the individual track locations. Charlie, do you want to talk about the talent?
We've made a significant investment in TV, as Alan says, and we're investing more in people because that's really the content that helps drive the wagering and helps bring more fans to the game. Our sort of 2 core hosts are Andy Serling. Andy, I think, is probably one of the best handicappers in the country. He's very outspoken. He's a little controversial. People don't always agree with him, but he's there's no more dedicated person than Andy. He works with Eric Donovan, who's our morning line maker. They do Trips and Traps, which we put on our social media site. This is where you can go back and evaluate, you know, races they think where horses were either advantaged or disadvantaged. That's been a great new feature. Jason Blewett is our other day-to-day handicapper that works with Andy. Jason's been, you know, with NYRA for a long time, but is tremendously enthusiastic and tremendously talented. Maggie Wolfendale is a new addition to the team about a year or so ago. Maggie has a strong pedigree in the racing business. Her dad's a trainer. She grew up, you know, riding horses. She was an exercise rider before she came to us. And she has a very unique ability. She goes into the paddock. Not every race, but she goes in and keeps very meticulous records on horses and how they look, and has been a little bit controversial with some of the trainers because, you know, there might be a 3 to 5 that's out there, and she'll say, well, the horse, you know, looks a little wetter than it looked last time, or the horse isn't really muscled up, and he may need a race, and she's really been terrific. John and Brielle is our race caller during the winter when Tom Durkin is not here, but he also fills in as an analyst. One of the new bright additions to the team we have, who really came in as a utility player for us, is Richie Migliori, one of the, you know, most popular and best jocks that we have on the NYRA circuit. He's extremely well-spoken. He does a lot of good work with HRTV. He did some
some analyst work on the NBC show that we did this summer, the Racing at Saratoga series. And finally, Ernie Munich. Ernie does a race day show on Mondays and Tuesdays, Dark Day. He and Meg are the primary hosts on that, and they've really been terrific. So we're looking to expand the offerings, the programming, both on TV and also on the Internet.
Many of you may have seen at the, not the Albany Law School, but the Racing Forum this past summer, the Jockey Club retained McKinsey, a world-renowned consulting firm, to take a look at horse racing in general and make some recommendations about the state of our sports business. And one of the things they said is that you really need to have a national television platform to be in, you know, the consciousness of America. Fans have so many entertainment options, and we need to be there available on television. So I think the whole industry is really working on this, but NYRA was the first out there actually this past summer with a deal with NBC where they covered 8 of our Saturdays at Saratoga. So summer at Saratoga, that has blossomed into deals with Keeneland and Churchill Downs, and actually NBC will be back here for the Wood Memorial. So we're mindful of whatever opportunities we have to be on national television and to promote our sport. We love the idea of an I Love New York Racing sort of 30-second spot. We think about it all the time, and in fact we're working on that, because when there's an opportunity to promote, we want to make sure that we have a commercial spot available to do that. Here is an example of summer at Saratoga.
For 50 years, the best horses, trainers, and jockeys in America have descended on Saratoga in the summer.
Like that spot. We think it really conveys the beauty of horse racing, and that's something that we really want to continue to foster and show. We can't finish up on how we think about reaching the public in a sporting business without talking about social media and online initiatives today. So you should know that we're very focused on this. We have 13,000 fans on Facebook. Andy and Maggie have Twitter followers, and I think recently Andy won some kind of industry award for his Twitter following. And then on YouTube, we're mindful of YouTube. We love the racing video. We think it sells itself, so of course we need to be present on YouTube as well. And before we open it up to questions, we'll just leave you with another look at long shots. This will be our example of what we think a 21st century sports betting facility should look like. We think it'll be available for you to see in November, and we're very excited about it.
Okay, thanks so much, Charlie. Thank you, Ellen. Just a little bit more history. It's amazing, but in the late 50s, Governor Harriman had to sign a piece of legislation that guaranteed 24 racing days at Saratoga. You've seen so much here about Saratoga and the beauty of Saratoga.
And that was because Aqueduct was taking dates from Saratoga. There was too many fans down here to deny dates down here, so they had a series of races down here with Saratoga at Aqueduct. So things have changed, and maybe we'll see another change here around Aqueduct. Ellen, you mentioned the colors and that Aqueduct blue. I thought that was fascinating because when I read that piece in the Times from 1959, opening day here, one of the innovations of Aqueduct was the color scheme. So you got a ticket that had a color, and it helped you guide your way to your seat to see such great horses as Buck Passer and Dr. Fager and Kelso when the place was so crowded. And I wonder if you maybe think about that, you know, Aqueduct Blue and Resorts World Red to distinguish the two facilities. Televisions, please pay particular attention today when you're walking around the facility to the placement of televisions. That's very important to the fan. My brother and sister-in-law, who are both here, we took a trip out to the Breeders' Cup in 2006 out to Churchill Downs. It was our first experience there. And we realized how spoiled we are here in New York, where we go frequently to Belmont and Saratoga, where there's TVs all over the place. And there we were there for, you know, the biggest day of the year in racing, and we're online to bet, and there was no TVs anywhere. So I think that's a very important part of the fan experience. Take a look at that today and see if they're adequate and if there are improvements that can be made. I thought I would start off just briefly talking about the topics we'll discuss. First in the question and answer will be ease of entry into the track from highways and public transportation, and the adequacy of signage. And then you've all arrived here today one way or another. Talk about your experience, if it was easy to get here, if you had difficulty, and what could be improved in that regard. Also, we're going to talk about access, egress, ingress between the Resorts World facility and the racetrack. Now, many of you may have not gone between the facilities yet. We'll do that on the tour. But if you have, I'm sure there's some regular players here, regular attendees. We'd like to hear about your experience in that regard. The quality of racing today is certainly a tremendous card. And something I do in the morning when I wake up is I always look at the purses at Aqueduct. I used to check the attendance, too, but that's no longer available. We can talk about that later. But we want to talk about the quality of racing. Is it improving, and what can be done to improve it further? And then what can be done to draw more fans to Aqueduct? I think it's a step-by-step process. I don't think Aqueduct's going to jump up to 15,000 fans a day, but what can be done to draw more fans here and to improve the experience of those attending? And then finally, we want to talk about a few issues that might be relevant to the betting public. There's issues about takeout and takeout refund. There are issues that have come up. We've got a lot of inquiries on days where Hurricane Irene, for example, hit Saratoga. They had to cancel racing that day. And there were issues about refunds of tickets that we've heard from different fans. We wanted to talk about those things, just general issues that have come up for the betting fan. So I thought I'd start it off now with that first subject. You all arrived here. Some of you may have taken public transportation. Some of you may have driven here. How was your experience in getting to the track? Are the signs okay? Are the things that can be done to improve that? Now, my brother Kevin's sitting there. We almost drove in through the stable entrance. I would say our experience was that was clearly our mistake, because we went back and we saw the sign had Aqueduct and track was forward, the stable entrance right. We inadvertently made the right because that's where our GPS was sending us. But then when we came back out, we were trying to get into Aqueduct, and we really couldn't do it. The only entrance we saw was the Resorts World Casino entrance. I don't know, Charlie, is there another entrance to the track beyond that entrance?
There's one, yeah, off Rockaway Boulevard, which sounds like the one you came in. We do not currently have an Aqueduct sign there, so it would be easy for you to think we can only get through the casino. So we definitely need to put a sign on the Rockaway Boulevard side. Then we have, on the far other end of the track, you can come off off Conduit, but that's a one-way road. So, you know, there are challenges just because of the way that the facility is laid out. Gensing did a pretty good job in paving and creating entrances, and I can tell you, I was just talking to Betty Bratton from Community Board 10, the day that we opened on October 28th, it was really tough, and we had some concerns about that, but They've created some traffic flows, and it seems to be working pretty well. But we do need an aqueduct sign off of Rockaway Boulevard, because you see the big resorts world, you see the big casino, but you really can't see the racetrack, so you don't know, you know, quite where you are.
You've been here a number of times. You know how to get here. You know, that's, you work your way to the back to find a track. That's a good point.
I'm Eddie Brayton from Community Board 10, which serves the local area. And as Charlie said, you know, there are some issues relating to traffic. And one of the things that we suggested to Genting that we might also suggest to you, in terms of GPS, when the address of the track is Rockaway Boulevard, GPS is sending people to Rockaway Boulevard. One of the things we ask Genting to do is on their directions page to put the highway directions first, so that, you know, people who are going to their website and looking for directions, they're getting that Belt Parkway direction first. Because when somebody just plugs in the address to a GPS, they're getting sent to Rockaway Boulevard.
It's a great suggestion, because it's a lot easier to come in off of the Belt than it is to come in on Rockaway Boulevard. It's a great suggestion.
If somebody takes the subway to the
races. I'm sorry, could you just wait for the microphone? Thank you.
As somebody who takes the subway to the races, I'm curious about when this subway station will be back in action, as it was a lot easier to leave here after the races when you could walk right up the ramp, as opposed to trying to make one's way down to the Conduit Avenue station.
We don't have a final date yet. I know Genting was trying to work very closely with the MTA. There was an issue about an elevator that had to be done to the MTA spec, and Genting was willing to put in, and that needed to be ordered, and it was going to take like 3 months. So they agreed to put in a temporary one. I'm not sure where those discussions are, but as most people probably know, when you come out from the city, the train doesn't stop here. It stops one block down. So it's a huge difficulty, particularly in the winter. But they're pretty much getting very close to completing the bridgeway, which they built, which will be great. But I don't have a date yet, but we'll try and get that and disseminate that, put it on the website, because a lot of people are obviously, you know, keen to know about that.
Charlie, can you speak to the status of that? You come in on the subway from the city. You get dropped off about a block south from here, and you walk up. Now, and that's still operational. What about leaving the track? Is that stop here now accessible, or you still have to walk one block south?
It used to be accessible until they started the construction. So until they get the construction done, you're going to have to go down to Conduit to pick up the subway.
There's a Wikipedia entry for that subway stop. It's unique. It's the only subway stop in the whole system that only lets off in one direction, the old one that was really just a northbound route. And sadly, I saw they had a statistic on there that it's the least utilized stop on the whole system, at least the stop here, because it's difficult for people to get access to the neighborhoods here. So hopefully that will pick up. Anyone else have questions or comments about arriving here today? Okay. How about the signage coming into the building, I guess from the parking lot, getting up here? Anyone have issues regarding that? All right. Anyone want to comment? I know that I've been to several racinos that are right at a racetrack, and you would never know there's a racetrack there if you weren't a racing fan and didn't go out of your way to sort of, you know, make your way around the racino to get to the racetrack. And I'm hoping that won't be the case here. But does anyone have comments about that, that's had that experience so far here?
I'll tell you a funny little anecdote, actually, even though I'm not a fan, or I am a fan, but I'm not here in that capacity. Michael Veach, who writes for the Saratogian on racing, came down before the Saratoga meet start when they still were in heavy-duty construction here, because he really likes Aqueduct, and he wanted to see it and see what Genting was going to do. And as we were walking around the casino where they were still doing a lot of work, we were up on the floor just below us, and we ran into Mike Speller, who's the president and CEO of Genting. And, you know, Mike was asking him that same question, are we going to be able to see the races? And he said, well, come with me. So we take, Mr. Spellis takes us through all the little work that was being done. They have a huge glass front that overlooks the track on both the first and the second floor. And we walk out onto the patio, and Mr. Spellers says, right here, and this is at the eight pole, he said, this is going to be the best seat in the house, and we're going to save it for you at the Wood Memorial next year. So he was really impressed, number one, that he knew the name of the Wood Memorial, which was a good thing. And the second thing was that they have the places to watch the race from the casino are both spectacular. They have big patios. They have full glass areas where you can see from the casino. We'd like to get them to put a few TVs and maybe a few betting machines in there, but I think anyone that's been downstairs on the first or second floor would, I think, confirm what I've said about how you can really see a lot of the track from the casino.
Will we see that today,
yes,
Charlie, on the tour?
Yep.
Okay, great. Anyone else comments on that? We'd certainly, oh, this gentleman has a comment, but please, that's something after the tour. With the evaluations you're filling out, we really like your input on that as to things that can be done to make access between the racino and the track easier. Thank you.
I was going to say that following up on Mr. Hayward's comment, there needs to be a little more integration in terms of being able to watch the races on television and to bet them from inside the casino. I know they're separate entities, separate revenue streams, but of late I brought friends out here, and frankly they're much more comfortable sitting in the casino by the bar, and yes, you can walk out to watch the races outside. I'd say it's not always easy to find a way out or in, including the fact there are a couple of doors in that have pull signs on them but no handles, so you can't open them. But also, if you're sitting in the casino, the only way to bet is to walk back out to the clubhouse, get your bet down, and stay there to watch the races or find your way out. And I think, that's really going to be important. Otherwise, you're not going to have the kind of crossover that maybe you want. Hopefully, when the facilities in the clubhouse are improved so that they're on a par or certainly close to par with the casino facilities, people will be more comfortable there and going back and forth. But for now, I've got to say, when I bring people out here, they really only want to stay in the casino, even if they're betting. So there's got to be some more integration there.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair criticism and an appropriate one. They really hustled to get this place built from when they first broke ground to when they opened up. It was exactly 1 year, and they opened up 1 week before we came back here to race from Belmont, and they were literally putting the rug down in the foyer here the day the place was opening up at 1 o'clock. So we did not want to impinge upon their efforts to get the place open, but we're hopeful that we can do exactly what you're talking about. And I think it would be good for them because it would bring more racing patrons into an area that right now there aren't any slots in this area that we're talking about, as you'll see. So it could accommodate some self-betting machines and some televisions.
Point on that. I was at Delaware Park, and it was very convenient. You walked in, you're in the casino, but the betting for the horse racing was right there near the exit, and you just made your bet and walk out and watch the races.
Yeah, Delaware does a good job of integrating that. It's a little easier for them because the company that owns the casino also owns the racetrack, so we've got a few issues to sort out with Genting, but you make a very good point.
I would just suggest that if you had Wi-Fi access where those big windows are on, the bar area, if you could do your internet betting there, you wouldn't need machines really, because, but you can't get NIBRA access to bet in the bar area right now. That would solve the problem. You could look at the beautiful windows and still, with your smartphone or something bet.
I think Wi-Fi access is an important issue at all the tracks for the fans, and it's not just for betting. The form, if you want to print it out, it takes a lot of time. Sometimes the printer breaks down at 12:30 at Saratoga. You're trying to get there at 1 o'clock. It's nice to have that maybe on an iPad where you can read the form, and if you have Wi-Fi access, it's easier to access that. Charlie, you want to talk about that?
Sure. We right now, The only places we've had Wi-Fi access at the Naira tracks historically has been in the press box. You can now go to Equestris, and there are people do exactly what you say. You can go with your iPad, and you can bet on it and seek data, you know, go in and check the scratches and so forth and so on. We plan to, by the time the end of the Belmont meet, we'll have the whole Belmont, including the backyard, Wi-Fi'd. We'll have, by this year at Saratoga, the entire, both the facility as well as the areas in the back will be Wi-Fi. And when you come back to Aqueduct, in addition to Questrix, we'll do our part of the building. But you make a good point. You know, in order to do Wi-Fi, Tom, I just think we would need to get a few more receptacles or whatever they call them and put them in those parts for Genting, so at least somebody, if they wanted to make a bet on a pad or a phone or whatever, they could do that. So we'll work on that. It's a good point. Yeah.
Thank you. It's a good point. We did invite Genting to come today. They were not able to come or decided not to come, but we're going to take this information down, these points down, and we'll certainly communicate them to Genting, and maybe we can have a program in the future that Genting attends.
Right, because I can use Wi-Fi in the rewards room now. But, you know, if you're in this side of the casino, and like that gentleman was saying, you bring in groups of people, you might be in that luxurious bar.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to bet from there. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great idea.
But currently you can get it in Equestris.
Get Equestris, and we have our Naira Rewards room. We have to be a Naira Rewards member and player. We have Wi-Fi in there as well.
Okay. Charlie, I saw something. I'm wondering if it's still true. They said Equestris, when it was built, what, in the early 80s, was the largest restaurant in New York City.
I believe it's still true, and you'll believe it when you get in there.
Okay. Great place to see the races. I've been there a few times. One of my favorite places in New York to watch races. Any other comments about issues related to the access or Genting type issues? Okay, at 12:50 today, we start an 11 race card. I've never seen anything like this. The first race at Aqueduct, the purse is $67,000. Do I have that right, Charlie?
Sure do.
Okay, that's pretty amazing. I think that may be a record for a first race at Aqueduct. But let's talk about that, the quality of racing. Are there things that you think can be improved in that regard, et cetera? Yes.
I want to ask one question. Are they looking for Genting to take over racing at Aqueduct? Is Genting going to control the racing
No.
at Aqueduct?
No. They're a world-class gaming company. They're based in Malaysia. You know, when New York City OTB closed, it was asked, you know, would they be interested in getting into New York City OTB, and they have no interest in doing that. You know, they do, as you know, have an interest in expanding, you know, this facility to incorporate a convention center and so forth. But the plan is, we have a franchise with the state, as I noted, that started in 2008. It goes for 25 years, so to 2033. And we have leases and contracts to conduct racing at Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga.
Charlie, I guess I have a question about the quality of the racing. I see the purses every day. They are increasing. I'm looking today at the Top Flight Handicap. That's the fifth race. It looks like it's going to go off with a field of five horses. Do you see that there might be an increase in the horse population here and in the entries for particular races? Are you seeing that yet? Or what plans does Naira have in that regard?
Well, the good news is we have a lot of Naira executives who are smarter than I am. And one of them is P.J. Campbell, who's our VP and Director of Racing. He just came back from a trip to Gulfstream Park where he was talking to various outfits that have not come to Aqueduct. I can tell you through February 12th, which from the first of the year, we had 12 trainers, including Billy Mott, who didn't race at Aqueduct in the winter. Dale Romans, who's got a horse in the Gotham today, who'd never race in the winter. We had 12 trainers that made over 10 starts in the first 6 weeks of the new year. So, PJ, could you talk about that a little bit? They got it. Just go ahead.
I think I'm very excited for Belmont Spring Meet coming up. We're going to have a lot of new outfits here supporting the program. obviously with the bigger purses, that always helps. But, you know, like today you said the top flight. I mean, you have Itch Tricky in there, who's second in this Breeders' Cup distaff, multiple grade one winner. You know, those are the things, you know, today on the card, in the Tom Fool, you have Kale's Posse, who won the Breeders' Cup mile, and Hanson, who's the two-year-old champ. I haven't seen that at Aqueduct, and I've worked here for 15 years on Gotham Day. So, you know, it's very exciting times when you strategically put money into the stakes schedule and the different types of races, and having the different outfits come here, and the Dale Romans and the Eddie Keneally and the Kenny McPeaks, and, you know, and our local contingent just been very strong, leaving more horses here for the winter, which they've never done before. And I think going forward, that's just going to get better and better leading into the Belmont Spring, Saratoga. And I even think next winter, I think it was a little bit unknown this winter of how the purses and what type of races we were going to have. And, you know, we've had a lot of better races this winter, smaller fields. But I think when the horsemen see those type of races going, they're very encouraged to leave the better horses behind. So I think going forward, that's you're going to see better and better product out there.
One thing I'd just like to add, PJ and I were out in the paddock yesterday before the sixth race, and Kieran McLaughlin had a horse in the race. In addition to the increased purses, we've announced a program that was actually developed by Rick Violette. I saw Rick around early. He's the president of New York Thoroughbred Horsemen. And we've had an increasingly hard time getting two-year-olds to start at Belmont, which means they start at Saratoga, which means there aren't that many horses ready to race in the graded stakes program. And the result of that, even though we think it shouldn't have happened, you know, was our premier race, the Hopeful, was downgraded from a grade two to a grade one. So Rick suggested, look, let's put up an additional $100,000 for any two-year-old that breaks its maiden at Belmont to come back and win a stake at Saratoga, Belmont, or a graded stake at Saratoga, Belmont, or Aqueduct. And so we were talking to Kieran McLaughlin yesterday. He trains for Sheikh Mohammed, Darley, and Godolphin. And coincidentally, last year, Sheikh Mohammed was at Saratoga for a couple of days, and he turned to Kieran and said, how come none of my horses are running? He said, well, I only got the two-year-olds, you know, a week ago. He said, well, we're going to change that. So Jimmy Bell, who runs Darley for Sheikh Mohammed, and Kieran, you know, were in, in North Carolina?
Aiken,
South Carolina. Just this week, picking out 10 two-year-olds that are going to go here to Belmont, hopefully race at Belmont and Saratoga. So we're very excited about the prospects, thanks to Mr. Violet's program, that Saratoga is going to have even more robust allowance races for two-year-olds, which you never see anymore because there just aren't that many horses that have broken their maidens.
PJ, you have an interesting job. I'm wondering, could you just talk briefly about what happens in your day?
Well, I mean, we usually start the day, you know, for instance, we're live here at Aqueduct Show. I usually start my day at Belmont in the morning. That's the majority of our horses are and horsemen. And, you know, just see them in the morning and, you know, what's going on, any issues. You know, work very closely with the horsemen because, I mean, that's the bread and butter. I mean, you got to see what's going on with them and, you know, their needs and concerns. And so after that, we come into the office and, you know, we fill the daily card every day, which when you pick up the program, you know, we write something called a condition book. And every day we fill those races, and it's about a three-week process, and you're going from track to track. Now, the complicated part about that is you have to have three mindsets usually, from Aqueduct to Belmont to Saratoga. You know, you have different trainers, you have different horses, and you have that constantly changing. So that's a bit of a challenge. But, you know, growing up in the industry, I think gave me a leg up on it because you know a lot of the players, you know the trainers and the horsemen's concerns, what they go through on a daily basis, you know, what it takes to get a horse to the races. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, these guys, you know, it's 12 months a year, 365 days a year. You know, there's no downtime. And to get a horse to the races is very, very difficult. So I think understanding those concerns and developing those relationships with the horsemen is probably the hardest part, and you have to really keep that going. You know, after that, it's just the day-to-day operations. You know, working with Glenn Kozak, our VP of Facilities, and Arn Track. You know, we have the relationship that, you know, we talk every day and we talk numerous times a day. And just, you know, what's going on the track, you know, the jockey's concerns, the horseman's concerns, the trainer's concerns, and just making sure everything goes, you know, kind of smoothly throughout the day.
PJ, do you watch that series on HBO, Luck?
No, I don't.
All right. I'm sure some of you people in the audience have seen it. It's interesting
scene in there about filling a race and the trainer Toro Escalante, which I'm sure you'll hear about. Very interesting. Any other questions, comments, or concerns about the quality of racing? Anyone on the council like to speak to that?
Yeah. He's still going to have a maiden claim in New York, Brits.
Yes, it depends on what level.
And, you know, we'll see when we go to Belmont and we go to Saratoga. We'll see what level we'll actually have them at.
Yeah, one of the big challenges that we have is while the purses have increased, unfortunately, because of the state of the industry, particularly after 2008, the fall crops have declined dramatically. I think they were at a high in 2006 of about 35,000 foals a year, and they're going to be 23,000, I think, in 2011. Here in New York, the state-bred crop got up to somewhere around 2,300 foals, and this year was around 1,700. So that although the purses are increasing, the number of horses available to run and also the number of owners that are still in the game because we lost a number of them still make it a challenge to fill the races. So you've got the increased purses, which will be helpful, but you've got the lack of owners and lack of horses, which will somewhat mitigate that.
Do they expect, Charlie, that to turn around, the horse population to increase in the next several years?
It's certainly going to increase in New York. I mean, over the last, just for example, last year, the New York bred yearlings increased in year-on-year sales price about 46%. The two-year-olds increased about 29%. But the gestation period of a horse is a year, so it's going to probably be 1 year to breed the horse, and then the horse doesn't run as a yearling, and then it runs, late in its two-year-old year. So you're probably looking at 3 years before you see a substantial turnaround. But you have major outfits. For example, Darley, I mentioned Sheikh Mohammed. They had a really beautiful horse that ran Saratoga last year, never quite got to be as good as he looked, a horse called Geronimo. Standing for $15,000 in New York. First time Sheikh Mohammed's had a sire here, and he's already got, I think, 120 mares on his dance card. So Vinery has two farms that they've just set up and taken over. Sezhu Thoroughbreds, which was one of the biggest breeders, went out of business about 3 or 4 years ago. Their farm has just been bought. So I think you'll see a tremendous growth here in New York, disproportional to the rest of the country.
Yes.
Some people still like to go to a teller to place their bets. I know you have.
I'm sorry. Could you start from the beginning? We didn't hear the first part of your question.
As far as the quality of racing, some people like to still go to fans to place their. I mean, some fans still like to go to a teller to place their bets, and there has been shutouts. I've heard people complain about getting shut out and not getting their bets in. So as far as, okay, I know you're going to put in more machines for self-service, but some people still like to come to the counter and place their bets. What is going to be anything to be rectified about that?
Yeah, Charlie, on that, let me see if I can capture this. We did get a few emails from people saying that the lines here at Aqueduct on the weekend and also at the site you have set up at Belmont, the lines have been fairly long and they've been getting shut out the windows. And these are people that want to place a bet with a teller rather than doing it with a machine.
We have about 590 machines here at Aqueduct. Some of them are self-serve and some of them have tellers. I think we have well over 150 tellers generally on a Saturday. That's a ratio, when you look at our attendance, of 1 to every 7 or 8 customers. We think that is a very good supportive ratio for our bettors. In fact, across the industry, there are other tracks that look at ratios of 1 machine to every 40 to 50 bettors. So we have a lot of machines. One of the advantages of operating all year long in 3 facilities is we do get attention from our tow companies, and we have almost 2,000 machines at our disposal depending on which track you're at and which time of year. So every so often, you don't calibrate things perfectly. But we do think we have, you know, a more than adequate number of machines here. The other thing that we've done this year to sort of support the betting and the viewing experience really is to work with Gulfstream to coordinate the post times. And doing that, you know, really helps with the wagering because it gives people more time to get their bets in, whether it's on Gulfstream or Naira, because there's a lot of betting on other tracks here. So those are the things that we look to, you know, support the betting activity.
If you could please put that in your evaluation, and to the extent anyone here has had that problem where they want to bet with a teller and they're getting shut out, I think that's something that we need to know, our board, and maybe we can make appropriate recommendations. Michael, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think I just commented because that's a really important point, especially for the new fan who's can be easily intimidated by, you know, a SAM machine or a machine. Did I get it right before I hit accept the bet? You kind of want somebody to hold your hand in the beginning. And I think some people do it well, and we have the SAM attendants up in Saratoga, I guess, down here. You know, talking about going to Gulfstream, if you don't mind me taking a 30-second story, which I think is funny. We were at Gulfstream last year talking to some folks and trying to some fans, and this one woman walked up to us, and you may know they have the 10-cent rainbow pick six, which you have to bet, and only one person can hit it to make it win, but it's 10 cents. And so this woman comes up to the teller and says, comes up to me, so what do we bet this rainbow 10s? You know, you have to bet it on the machine. So she goes over and gets in line, stands in line in front of the machine, gets to the machine, scratches her head, and comes back to me, and she said, where do I put my dime in? And I thought, you know, she was so used to the slot machines, where do I put my dime in to get this 10-cent bet? So fans come from all different sizes and experiences, and we have to take that into consideration.
Michael, wasn't there that better that bet it twice?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Automatically, yeah. Only one person can win at this person.
There was a player I was told by the guys down at Gulfstream that he played the 10-cent rainbow, and he was so happy with his picks, he bet it again, so he'd get it twice, but he negated his own bet.
Michael, was it Gulfstream that you mentioned? I know I've been to racetracks that have this. I don't know if it's Gulfstream, where the people walk around, actually. Tellers walk around in the crowd, and they have hats on and signs that say, I can take your bet.
I'm sure a lot of people do that. I just noticed it at Gulfstream. The marketing department they have blue vests, and it says, bet with me. And you walk up to them and say, I like the 1-3-4, how do I play it? And they walk you over to the machine, they show you how to play it, they explain it to you, and then they leave you go on your way. But they bet with me, you know, for that new person that's down there for the snowbird that doesn't know how to play and wants to know how to play the game.
Kelly?
The lady who asked the question, can you clarify for me? I'm curious whether the people who want to bet with tellers who are getting shut out want to bet with a teller because that's just their preference or because they're not comfortable with the self-serve machines. If they're not comfortable with the self-serve machines, is it because they don't know how to use them, they don't feel secure in using them? Is that something that could be addressed?
It's a little bit of both. Some people just, because when you have people that they can place their own bets, they don't think about the person behind them. So that's why if they're in front of a teller, they can't stand at the window and monopolize it. So it's a little bit of both. Some people prefer it because, like I said, they can get their bets in. They can ask questions. You can't ask a machine a question, you know? And then as far as the machines itself, when you have people that can place their own bets, they're not thinking about they got 10 deep behind them. So it's a little bit of both. But I find some people, especially grassroots bettors, there's some that do. Use their self-service machines, but grassroots bettors like to come to the window because they know their counterparts behind them, and it's not the people they're not going to think about. This race is about to run off, so it's a little bit of both.
Thank you.
The other thing we find also is just the ease of the process. If you have to go buy a voucher at one location and then go to a terminal to place your bet, it's not an easy process. So what we've looked at Belmont Cafe is having cash accepting machines, which do not prevail at Naira Tracks. But, you know, that's something if you can get around the cash management and control issues, that's stuff. We need to do that. We need to make it easier for people to bet. Thank you for the feedback about, you know, the tellers and customer service folks being on the floor. Those are the things you can do when you have wireless technology and handheld devices. We're not there yet, but we do want to go in that direction.
I wonder maybe if a new fan wants to begin to use your automated system, is there any way at Aqueduct that they would have a learning experience? They could go up and try it on a dummy tote and say, how do I do it so I don't really have to do it when I got real money in my hand?
We probably, Stephen Travers is here. He's the head of our guest services, and he might want to comment. I think it would maybe not there to the degree that we'd like to be, but in our, I think I showed you the slide where the guest service area is, and you'll go by that on your tour. So I think you could ask them that question on the tour and see the response. But yes, clearly we want to support new bettors.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things we've done at Saratoga this year. We had people go around and in the restaurants who could actually load the cash cards for the day. So say people going to Windows, they could get a cash card, they could load it at the table, and they could bet with the on the machines at the tables. So we've done that this year. And we're also seriously looking at how we're going to demonstrate and how we're going to, as you said, get new people to the racetrack to see how they bet. We're looking at that at the moment.
Get back to the question that this man asked about people walking around to help with the self-serve machines. We used to have that job, and they took it away, so right now there's nobody on the floor to help any of the customers. They have to come to the windows, and we try to help them as best we can.
And that's at Aqueduct?
Well, Aqueduct, I think they might have one at Belmont. I'm not sure, and I think there might be a couple at Saratoga, but
I seem to recall
there
last...
used to be like maybe one in each area to help.
Yeah, I seem to recall seeing people in Saratoga this past summer at the automated machines that could provide help.
Well, they're more likely to have them at Saratoga because that's a whole... You have a lot more new people coming in who aren't sure what they're doing.
Yeah.
So you're going to see that more, but here and at Belmont... No more.
Okay. All right. I think we're sort of... Any other comments from the members of the board on that? Michael?
I was going to finish up at the end. I have a question at the end.
Okay. Next, and we're sort of getting into these issues, but what can be done to draw more fans to Aqueduct and to improve the experience of those attending? And I... also have here, are Naira and Genting adequately promoting these goals and their plans? Anybody with ideas to get more people out to the track? Well, I guess there's no admission now, correct?
Correct.
You can come to Aqueduct for free now.
Well, I can tell you, when you walk around today, you'll be wishing we weren't so successful at getting people out to the track, because this place is going to be jammed. But we would love any suggestions we have on, non-big days to get people out here. We think the subway's going to help a lot because it'll just make the place more accessible and more popular. It's about I live in the Upper West Side. It's about a 45-minute subway ride from there, so it's pretty doable.
Do you know what kind of crowd you expect today, Charlie, roughly?
The max we can really hold here now because we turned over so much state space to the Racino is probably about 10,000 people, Stephen?
Yeah, about 10,000. We expect to probably get about 8,500 today.
Okay. Which will be...
That's a big day.
Sorry?
Sitting or standing?
No, total capacity for the day.
I look every day at the results, and used to post the attendance figures. They no longer do that, but do you make an attempt to figure out how many people might be here at the racetrack on a particular day?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't know why this happens, because we do have an attendance figure, but we may not have it quickly enough to get it to the press, because there are some tracks that stop giving out their attendance. Churchill Downs doesn't do it, Magnum Tracks don't do it, but we keep an attendance record, but we're not getting it to the paper, so that's something we probably ought to look into, Dan. And our head of media relations. So hopefully you'll see it in your paper again soon.
I recall being at a conference, the conferences that Bennett would run up at the Gideon Putnam,
and somebody that was involved in the legislative end, the comments were about who cares about attendance at the track, it's easier to bet from your living room, etc. And this person on the legislative end said, it's important that people come to the track and that you can demonstrate that when you go before government and you're asking the government to do various things that will promote racing, it's important that they see that the fans are interested in the sport.
Yeah, and also, if you're going to generate a new fan, you've got to do it at the racetrack. You know, even at Aqueducts, it's going to be pretty mild today. The rain should have stopped. You can get very close to the horses. You can see the riders. And, you know, at Saratoga, great story. Our CFO took his then-girlfriend, now wife, not CFO, our general counsel. They sat a couple of seats watching races. She was bored. They started going back out, and they were going back out by the paddock. On the way out to the car, they saw the horses, and they stayed the rest of the day because she fell in love looking at the horses. So I think it's very, very important to promote the live track. We need to do more at Belmont. We did increase our attendance year on year at both Aqueduct and Belmont last year, but that's where you make the fans, is at the live track environment.
Maybe it's appropriate now that maybe Ellen could tell us a little more about, because part of our mandate as a council is to work on creating the I Love New York horse racing campaign. And as you know, the other I Love New Yorks are part of state government and economic development. There's a bunch of other opportunities. I Love New York Wines, I Love New York, et cetera. And I think it's real interesting if we can get the message out from Buffalo to Montauk and Ogdensburg to Staten Island that racing is fun. It's not always about the handle, but it's fun to start with and come see it and experience it. I'd be interested in, since it's our mandate, there might be some partnering here that we could work with NYRA on to see, and maybe the horsemen and owners and breeders, to, how do we begin to create an I Love New York racing campaign? Because that certainly would bring people out.
And we would very much like to do that. We see it the same way as it's about New York racing. We want to, it is a partnership with the horsemen. We have some beautiful footage from Saratoga, so we're in the process of reaching out to the production company to see what footage is available to us. And from there, we would script a spot. So I will definitely keep you, you know, in the loop, because we'll certainly would like the feedback. But we think it's important. We think there is more attention, as we talked about earlier, on the national TV front, and we don't want an opportunity to go by without us taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and just more specifically, we created a new VP of marketing position, which we're hiring for. With the monies, there's been some criticism recently of the VLT tracks not putting money back into promoting the game. We added an additional $1 million to our marketing budget this year because we've been operating, you know, with some financial difficulties, to say the least. But we think marketing's a big deal, and Alan had started an initiative to get something to promote racing, promote the beauty of it, and that would dovetail nicely with an I Love New York theme, and also with the breeders, I Love New York breds. I mean, there's a logical, and one of the things that I think everybody has to appreciate is, at the height of the New York breeding development, which stalled in 2005 because the VLT stalled, at that time we had 400 horse farms with 19,000 direct jobs and $1.2 billion in economic activity. So, you know, this racing industry, you know, supports a big, you know, agri-farm business as well. So I think that's a message that we've got to get out to everybody as well.
Yeah, maybe Kelly can, I won't put on the spot, but one of our other mandates, because you may go on the website, and I don't know if it affects, it doesn't really relate to NYRA, but, well, it does, but you made me think of it, is that we talked about, can we create the Farm of the Year Award, which is part of our mandate, and the logic behind that is, if farms are actually talking to people in their communities about the beauty of racing, inviting them over, showing them around, having tours, educational events at local schools, you're going to begin to teach people about the sport of racing, about thoroughbred racing, before they even get to the track. And we haven't have a plan to do that, but I think it's an exciting idea of trying to do that. And I know some of the folks like up in Saratoga, with old friends, the operation up there. They have I think it's a, whatever date it is, it might even be January 1st, the Thoroughbred's birthday. They open up the breeding farm for donuts and coffee and cider and invite everybody to come in and learn about breeding and racing. And it really, you get a couple hundred people show up, and it's an event.
Yeah, on that, I think, I'm sorry, go ahead, you had a question, thank you.
Just how do you take the people who might be reached through an I Love New York Racing ad campaign or through the television programming and turn them into gamblers who will support the game, not just people who sort of come out for a day or enjoy the benefits to the state, but how do you turn them into people who will support the game with their wagering dollars?
It's a great question because people talk about attendance. They talk about let's get people out to the track. And then when we get them out to the track, we put people up in front of a microphone and they say, bet the three horse because he's dropping down, turning back, and he loves the slot. And someone looks at the person next to him and says, what the heck are they talking about? That's what we've created this race quest for. Race quest is to take, and the way you learn to bet on horses is you learn this little line of data called a past performance line. And you can tell there's a speed horse in there, you can tell it's a favorites in there, you can tell if they're dropping in class, and it means nothing to their regular fan when they're first engaging the sport. So they come and bet on birthdays, gray horses, and their girlfriend's cat's name or whatever. So RaceQuest is set up, and you should go look at it on Naira.com. But it's really basically to take what are those key elements that can result in a horse winning a race. Best trainer, best jockey, likes the grass, bred well, likes speed, likes the track. So people can start conceptualizing, say, there are things that can help us determine the outcome of the race. And, we just got this race quest thing going, but that's the critical element. You can get people to the track, but you've got to get them engaged. And as you know, once they hit their first winner, based on some empirical way they've approached it, you've got a good shot of having that person coming back to the track.
Hi. My suggestion just would be the showdown contest. You had that a few years back. And all the other tracks do it. So I think that gets people to kind of figure horses than just like, colors or something like that. And you would turn into maybe more of a gambler or a player or whatever you want to call it.
That's a suggestion. We should have a game, and I think we did for the first track to do it, called Naira Showdown. And all you had to do, it sounds real simple, is you'd sign up at the beginning of a race meet, Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, and you just pick one horse, and all I had to do was show. And it's remarkable. You would never make it through a race meet where, more than one person won. So, it was one of those situations, I think it was $10 to enter, and whatever money we got to enter, we paid out in a prize. So that's an interesting, we'll have to revisit that.
A lot of the other tracks still do.
Yeah, it's a very popular promotion.
And they do it free, but you did it for $10.
Yeah, let's put that down on our issues. Charlie, I recall when that was first instituted, it was free at the Naira tracks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it can be free again. We don't have to charge for that.
Yeah, and that's fun. Let me just throw out another thing, something that bothers me. I'll go to the racetrack with my brother and, say, I like the four horse, I like the five horse. And I said, Kevin, the five horse is Caliber Choa, maybe the six horse is Caleb's Posse. There's very little identification, I think, with the great athletes of the sport, being the horses and also the jockeys. And I wonder if there's any way to promote that. I mean, back in the 70s, people identified with Secretariat and with Forgo and horses like that, but you don't really see a fan following for particular horses anymore. Alan?
The Rachel Alexander Woodward Stakes just show up over and over again. You don't have to worry about fan participation anymore. That was probably the most emotional race I've ever seen in my life. And it doesn't, you wouldn't get that same emotion if you're watching it at a OTB. You had to be there.
Pat, I think promoting all the athletes, the equine, the jockeys, even the trainers and the people involved. I know Naira is quite supportive of one of Thoroughfan's efforts to create a towel guide booklet for fans to go to the workouts at Saratoga in the morning and be able to identify the trainers by their saddle towels. And I think, all of a sudden you make the trainer a little bit more popular. I can remember I was having dinner at a restaurant in Saratoga, and Eddie Keneally was sitting next to us, And we showed him the book, and this first comment to somebody at the table said, look, my name's in it. I mean, he was impressed that his name was in it. I mean, the fans really know who the trainers are. And I think we got to bring the athletes out to the people.
It might help if more people got in and watched the workouts, like at the Oklahoma track.
Yeah, Alan, for those of you that may not be aware of this, I'm sure most of you are, there's a track across the street from Saratoga Racecourse, and it's called the Oklahoma Training Track, and I guess it got its name many years ago, and people said, oh, that's, you know, all the way out in Oklahoma, it seemed far away. But it really is one of the most beautiful tracks you'll see. You go out there and you see the trees, and I try to convince my wife that we need to buy a horse there on Fifth Avenue that backs up to the training track. I'm not having a lot of success there. And they used to allow the public to go in and view the workouts. I know there's been some liability issues. I followed the case law on that, where people were at the Oklahoma watching the workouts, which really is a beautiful experience, and there were injuries when a horse got loose. But is there any hope that that could be open again to the public?
There is definitely hope. There's even a budget, actually, and we're in the early parts of planning to build a new viewing stand. Hopefully I'm not getting ahead of us, because we know the 150th anniversary of Saratoga is coming, and we would really like to get this done before all of that celebrating kicks off. So it's very much on our minds, not only in Saratoga, but also at Belmont, although at Saratoga it really is where the fans have made it clear that they really want to watch the training. So we're going to respond.
But specifically, it was right before I got here. I was here in 2004, but in 2003, when Naira had some legal difficulties with the prosecution of the paramutual clerks, State Racing Wagering Board came in and said, listen, you can't. This affected the backstretch of Saratoga, where people used to love to come and watch the races. It affected Oklahoma, where people used to like to work out. If you didn't have a badge, you weren't getting back there, and if you got back there, we got in big trouble. So what happened is that really limited a nice experience for a lot of people. So what we're doing, specifically what this Oklahoma initiative is, the area right across the street from Fasig Tipton, we're going to keep that as a public area right up to the racetrack, build a viewing stand there, which will actually have a bathroom, which you can't find any place on Oklahoma. It'll have a place you can get some coffee, and it'll have a viewing stand on two levels. So we're really excited about it. Unfortunately, it's not going to get done for this year, but it will be done for next year, assuming we can get all the permitting and everything done that we need. So, you know, that's something that actually Thurfan has been asking us for right from their inception. So we're finally going to be able to get it done, and I think it'll be pretty cool.
Great. I think we have time for one more question, and then we'll take the tour of the facility.
Okay. I just wanted to respond to the question about what can be done to improve, to bring people out to Aqueduct. And I think the improvements that are forecast will do that, because, frankly, I've brought people out here in the past, and they find the facility is nowhere near the kind of, you know, level of comfort and service that they would like when they come out for a day. And it's a turnoff for a lot of people. The other thing, following up on the comments by Mr. Hayward, are to the extent it can be done without incurring liability, is to get people more access to the backstretch area, to the barns. In addition to being a fan, I'm an owner, and one of the things I do is I contribute to various charities a day at the races. And I bring people to the backstretch. I get them badges as they come in. They visit the barn. I bring them to the races, get them lunch, sit down, walk them through a few races. And half the time they say, you know, I'm going to come back. I had no idea this was anything like it. If you bring somebody in, put them in the building and just leave them alone, they're probably not going to come back. But if they get that contact with the horses, whether it's at the paddock, the backstretch, whatever, that's going to bring them back. And the other thing, I know it's a major capital issue, but if the broadcast could be upgraded to high def, that would be a big factor, because people look at it and they say, you know, what are we, back in the 80s? They see the broadcast on NBC from Saratoga and see the quality of that, and then compare it to the daily broadcast. I know that's a big ticket item to convert to high def, but along with Wi-Fi, if you got that, you're really bringing it up into the modern era.
Thank you. We agree on all fronts. When we talk about branding, Soon we'll have a new marketing director, but the fan experience is part of that. The day at the track, not just coming and sitting, but creating those unique experiences is part of what a marketer thinks about. So that's very much on our minds. HD, you know, it did make the list this year in our very long list of things we think we should invest in. It is extremely expensive for us. So we didn't think this year was the time to do it. But, you know, HD is beautiful, and to feature racing on HD is great. When we have a more solidified national broadcast platform, it makes more sense from an investment point of view. It is not justified by, you know, the 700 locations that receive in our signal every day, because they don't necessarily turn around and offer it in HD. But it is on the list, and we would like to see it happen in that sort of midterm horizon.
Okay, well, one more comment or question, and then we'll take the tour. Yes?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up television again. Cable vision still, I live out in Long Island, still cuts off at 6 o'clock.
and they have that Italian cooking program on at 6 o'clock? That's interesting.
Doesn't have a second channel, so when the live racing is on, you can see the out-of-town stations. And also, it's not on Verizon, racing all day long, from what I know. One of your shows might be on Verizon, but the day-to-day races are not on Verizon. And there's no synergies when it's switching on a dark day or at the 6 o'clock. One day, there's a stake race from Gulfstream with all New York horses, New York racing, and they're showing a race from Portland Meadows. Like, there's no thinking of what does the New York racing fan want to see.
Liz Bracken, who's in charge of our national simulcasting and deals with Nassau and Suffolk, can maybe offer a little insight here.
Okay, first of all, a lot of people think that this is our channel, and it's actually not. It's actually a channel that is run by Nassau TV. But Nassau TV does not have the ability to put video on their own channel, which is why you see those ugly, odd screens at night when we're not on the air. We had a fiber link to Cablevision in Hicksville that we lost 3 years ago because we lost the vendor. We've been feeding that channel with satellite time since then. Satellite time is extremely expensive. You get into overtime issues. That channel was a shared channel. We only had it till 6 p.m. weekdays, 7 p.m. weekends. What has happened now is that channel is not a shared channel. Cablevision actually wants to do extra program, us to do extra programming. Nassau TV has come to us and said, we need extra programming on that channel. The situation was, how do we get a fiber line into Cablevision when the only conduit is Verizon? We did an MSG deal this year. We asked MSG to help us with Cablevision, to help us install that line. And I'd be glad to tell you right now that that line is ordered and is supposed to be installed in May 1st of this year. Hopefully we won't have any delays on that. What that will mean is we can take Channel 74 in Nassau County and make it Channel 71 in New York City. We can put programming on it till 11 o'clock every night. We can show Yonkers, we can show Delta, we can show Charlestown. It's very exciting. As for showing Portland Meadows and not showing Gulfstream, obviously that's not what we're aiming to do. I do a daily schedule where we take the four best tracks and we put them in a layered sequence. The idea is that Gulfstream and Santa Anita have priority and the other two tracks do not. I can say that things don't always go the way we want them to go when four tracks go off at the same time, but we do continue to work on that, and definitely appreciate the feedback, but we really hope that very soon we're going to expand our programming in Nassau County.
So you will have it on Verizon
Fios? Right now that channel is not on Verizon. What we're using is Verizon, we're using the fiber to get it to Cablevision. I don't know why it's not. It is on Fios in some parts of New York City, it is on Cablevision in some parts of New York City, and it's on Time Warner in some parts of New York City. But that channel in Nassau seems to be limited to Cablevision.
Okay, that's a really important issue, and I'm wondering if you could reach out to us directly with that, and we can put it on our agenda. We're actually ready for a start of the tour right now. I realize we may lose many of you thanks so much for coming out here to the program, and I hope that you'll come to future programs and give your input, because the fan input is extremely important to the sport. So, Charlie, how are we going to start the tour now?
Mr. Kozak, are you the tour man?
Sure.
If we can just collect right over here on the left-hand side, we're off.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's an issue.